Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another week of the Revelation series. It's another extravaganza, or gonza, of course it is. And I left you Friday with an amazing statement that he will suckle him, that is, suckle Jacob, with honey from the crag. From the crag. Remember last week, I thought it was bizarre enough that honey comes from the mouth of a bee. Now, it's true. I used to think honey came from the anus of the bee. I was not too up on it at that time. And I thought, wow, bees shit honey? That's amazing. No, they spit it. They spit it. It rhymes, but it's amazing. Now, more amazing here is that the honey is coming from the crags, from the rocks. And this is a throwback to Israel. We'll recognize this reference. Obviously, it's a throwback to when water came from the rock in the wilderness. As fantastic as that is, I think it's even more fantastic that honey comes from a rock. And so God is twisting the miracles here into high gear for them, and this is what he will do for them, and the remnant is going to trust him. So let's finish this section of Israel's early history, because after this, Moses is going to jump into the period of the prophets, and this is a sad era for Israel. A prophet only shows up in Israel when there's trouble, when the leadership fails them. So when the kings of Israel apostatize, a prophet comes. God calls a nobody, a bumpkin from a country place, from a wilderness place, and this scraggly, unkempt man of ill manners will come into the circle of the kings and scold them, shake his finger at them, much as the claw used to do with me. She'd curl her little finger and say, I'll have you thrown out of this class. Well, the prophets came to Israel and said, I'll have you thrown out of this land. Who, that guy? No, you, because they completely disobeyed God. So we're gonna get to that here. But first, we'll finish up with this, and we'll get all the blessings here that God is going to give to Israel. Oil from the flinty rock. He will suckle him with honey from the crag and oil from the flinty rock. Again, even more spectacular than water from the rock. You can sort of, I've seen water come like through rocks in Colorado up in the mountains, thinking specifically of Pikes Peak. And what was that one crazy mountain I climbed that's harder to climb than Pikes Peak? The Cameron Cone. It was the Cameron Cone. Look up Cameron Cone, Colorado, and you will see a peak that looks impenetrable, but only like 35 people climb it every year. It's so steep, you have to get on your hands and knees. Whereas Pikes Peak, there are thousands of people a year climb Pikes Peak. Cameron Cone? No. Forget about it, but I climbed the Cameron Cone. Anyway, but this is going to come from the rocks, which is crazy. I mean, the water in the wilderness did, it's not like it came through the rocks, it came from the rocks. Not saying that wasn't a miracle, but I'm saying is that these are easy miracles for God, and God has more miracles in store for Israel. Curdled milk of the herd and milk of the sheep with fat of meadow lambs and rams. Remember, this is a song, and I could hear this in some sort of rhythm here. Curdled milk of the herd, and now wait a minute, curdled milk of the herd and milk of the sheep, fat, forget it, I can't even imagine this as a song. This stuff was important to Israel. You hear this and you laugh. Israel hears this and they're like, their eyes roll in the back of their heads. Oh my God, are you kidding me? Curdled milk of the herd and milk of the sheep with the fat of meadow lambs and rams, the fat of meadow lambs. Are you serious? That's what's coming, the fat of meadow lambs? We wouldn't do much for us, but for them, it's phenomenal. Sons of Bashan and he-goats. Oh, that would put them over the top. With fat of kidney of wheat. With fat of kidney of wheat. That's the exact wording here. And it would make an Israelite's lips curl and their toes curl when they heard of that. And blood of the grape shall you drink that is turbid. Blood of the grape shall you drink that is turbid. The blood of the grape, picturesque way of saying wine. And turbid wine is thick wine. It's mucousy. It's almost, you can't see through it. It's thick. And I think this is a good thing. It has like stuff in it floating around. It's not It's not crystalline wine. It's got stuff in it, and they love it. It's something that must be succulent to them. I don't know, but an Israelite goes crazy over this stuff. Now, the early history of Israel is an exhibition of the power of God. But watch what happens when we get to this section of the Song of Moses where they've been suffused with this stuff. They take it for granted. They forget their maker. They become so comfortable in their prosperity. And this happens to Christians today, that they begin to worship the prosperity and not the God of the prosperity. And let's go ahead. Well, let me quote from A.E. Knox's book here. Before bringing them into the promised land, he put them through the evils of Egypt. And this is God's way. Egypt comes first, then comes the promised land and the discipline of the desert. Great alliteration there. Also a great place for discipline. The desert. There he taught them to rely on him. This is where the water came from the rock. This is where the quail miraculously appeared. The manna in the wilderness. How do you produce a buffet in the wilderness? Well, if you're God, it's not a problem. There he taught them to rely on him and look to his care and protection. Then he brought them into the land with its milk and honey, its oil, its wine, with the fat of kidney of wheat, and of course, the fat of meadow lambs and rams. That's what he did for them there. And he also gave them the spiritual benefits which these things signify. So it's not just the fat of meadow lambs and rams. This is physical substances, but it speaks of spiritual sustenance and substances that nourish the spiritual longing of an Israelite. So our most immediate need is food. We can't live without it. And I guess to our consciousness, our secondary need is spirit, which is kind of crazy because without spirit, we don't even live. But I don't think you need to apologize for needing the basics of life, food and water, clothing, shelter. And God is aware that these are your most immediate needs. And so he uses them as a figure of speech for spiritual needs. He clothes you from above with his spirit. Jesus said, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. So bread is used as a jumping off place to acquaint us with his spiritual feeding of us. Jesus says, I'm the river of life, the water. He who drinks from me will never thirst again. So it's okay to use our most immediate needs. Sexual needs also, great analogy that God uses, brings us to an immediate need in order to jump us off into a spiritual need, that fulfillment, that oneness. God longed for fellowship. That's why he created everything. Simple. Why, when God was alone in the universe, why wasn't he, quote, happy? Because he was alone. And so God makes us to not want to be alone. We want companionship. This comes in many shapes, forms, sizes. Companionship comes from family. It comes from friends. There's a certain companionship you have with a friend. But if you have a friend, say, with benefits, if you have a wife, if you have a person with whom you can go into a deeper relationship, then that becomes a portal to an even more intimate relationship with God. Or should I say, it pictures a more intimate relationship with God. And I get into this in detail, the parable of sex and what it means, in an upcoming book called Divine Principles of Sexual Attraction. And it's going to be coming out paired with Eve Raised. Watch for it. Watch for it. It takes me time to do these things, but I do them, don't I? So the problem is that then the people become corrupted. How do they become corrupted with all this physical goodness that is not only physical goodness, but speaks of deeper spiritual truth? Because they then forget the maker of these blessings and they come to rely on the things. They become worshipers of the creature rather than the creator. The process of corrupting the people consisted in loading them with physical delights, loading them with it. And the corrupting process was the opposite of what we'd expect, because it appears to be the reverse. You know, that, okay, wow, he's going to corrupt them by giving them deprivations. No, he actually corrupts Israel by giving them blessings. This is why, follow this, it is a blessing of God to withhold physical blessings from us, because we think we can handle it. You hear stories of people winning the lottery, and you hear about them ruining their lives, having arguments with their families, and they end up going crazy and being corrupted. And we think, oh God, well, these people are stupid. If you give this blessing to me, I promise I'll know how to handle it. I will be able to handle it. Just let me win the lottery. I'll show these sorry saps how it's done. Well, no, you won't. You won't. That's no. God can make you win the lottery easily, but he withholds it from you because you're just going to be like the other saps who lose all their money, who vex themselves with trials of all kinds. It's a universal truth that the love of money is the root of all evils. And if you want to live or win the lottery in the first place, that tells me you have a love of money. And that's bad. A guy told me yesterday, this was kind of funny. He was talking about money and wealth, and he says, you know, you can get a book on how to make $1 million. And I said, I don't want to make $1 million. I said, if I wanted to make money, I would have stayed with the post office. I live to have a purpose in life. And he looked at me like I had just arrived from a moon of Neptune. He couldn't understand. You worked for the post office? He was very impressed. You worked for the post office? Yes, I worked for the post office. And you quit the post office? Yes. Why did you do that? Because, again, I didn't want to have a job. I wanted a purpose. Oh, what's your purpose? Well, my purpose is to publish the things of God, to acquaint people with spiritual truths, spiritual realities. His next comment was this, and I swear to you, this was just yesterday, this was his comment. He said, well, you know, you can make a lot of money in religion. What? I said, I'm not in this to make money. It was such a foreign concept to me. I couldn't believe he was telling me this. I mean, I can't. You know me, but he didn't know me very well, so it was hard to explain to him why my goal, he can't even wrap his head around somebody whose goal is not to make more money. He's into real estate, he buys properties, wants to make money, wants to turn it around, make a profit, blah, blah. I said, all my wealth is deposited in the next life. I'm doing things now that matter, and my income is up to God. Again, I was speaking Swahili to the guy. So here we have evidence all over Scripture that a God who withholds blessings from you that you think you want, that you think you need, is actually a loving God. And the test case, as all text, the mother of all test cases is Israel, because God suffuses Israel with physical blessings. And what happens? They're corrupted. He gives them their soul's desire, and they go apeshit. They just gravitate then to their soul, and they camp around their soul. They forget where it came from. They start to think, yeah, we had this stuff all along, and they are then confused by the source. They're confused. Not the source doesn't confuse them. They're confused as to what is the source. They forget the giver, and they concentrate on the gift, and that is when the false deities move in, and the false deities were able to seamlessly somehow convince these people that they were the source, the false gods, of their blessing, and not that old mean man in the sky. So this is only part of the vexation that will come to you when you love money. And it's the beginning of the end. And so, again, God really is blessing you. I promise you he is, by withholding these things. God can open floodgates and bring wealth to you. He's God. He controls everything. He controls the gates of wealth, of power, of acceptance, and to open them is nothing. In fact, it takes more work for God to keep these things from you, because it's like he's pressing them back all the time. All this stuff is just ready to be lavished on you when he returns for you. Then you're going to see all this great stuff. In the meantime, he has your well-being, your growth, your spiritual sustenance in mind. For these things, he gives you tastes. Gives you a little steak here, a little wine here, maybe some tuna in a pouch with olive oil. Maybe, if you're good. And it's all a picture. And maybe he will allow you to see a wonderful bra ad in the newspaper for you men. And so all this, it's just, oh, that's nice. It's just a little taste of a heavenly bounty. And then he cuts off the rest. Great. That's all you need. That's all you need. You know why I don't like going to buffets? Because people go to buffets and just to make pigs of themselves. And they scarf themselves. And they load their plates up. And it's like, brop. And I don't know. I'm a little bit disgusted by it. People who want to take me to a buffet always waste their money. The buffet is like $15. Okay, Zender. And you feel compelled to eat everything there. Where I just want to eat a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And not fill myself up. I want to feel light. I want to feel smart. I want to feel happy. So do not take me to a buffet. No, you're going to lose money. If you're willing to lose money and you just want to watch me make a fool of myself and the staff and the cooks and appear to diss them, then go ahead. Take me to Ryan's or take me to Ponderosa. Is that place still in business? And you'll have a good laugh. But if you really want to make me happy, then take me to a bird feeder. And I will be happy eating the little seeds and going my merry way, flitting about intelligent and light.